Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, July 31st, 2022. It is the first ever edition of WrestleNomics Radio in, well, maybe last week was, in any event. Furthermore, and in addition to that, this is an episode of WrestleNomics Radio in the post-Vince McMahon era, and first and foremost, I want to thank my co-host today, Chris Gullo, for ensuring that this show is actually broadcasting. Hello, Chris Gullo.
Hello, good morning, Brandon. And we could say it's the first show in the full control of Triple H creative era, could say, with no Vince McMahon lurking in the shadows for Triple H to be head of creative.
Yes, what are we going to talk about today, Gullo?
Well, we actually have a jam-packed show today. We will discuss Triple H, Paul Levesque being the new head of creative for WWE. We'll talk about Vince McMahon being under investigation, not just by WWE's board of directors, but actually by the SEC and federal prosecutors. What are the potential ramifications for AEW with Paul Levesque being head of creative? WWE has decided to put a blackout on stock trading for employees. We'll discuss SummerSlam business performance and much more tidbits here on this WrestleNomics Radio.
Yes. Moments ago, we attempted to go live. I thought we were live. But you, Chris Gullo, you reviewed the situation and noticed that I had actually not hit the go live button. But you saved the program today, so thank you. So anyway, before we get going here, I think we need to just put out a big thank you to a person who is very, very important in history. Some would argue that there is no professional wrestling as you know it without this man. We're not wrestling fans. We're not here if not for this man who really transcended wrestling. He was involved in other forms of entertainment, really brought wrestling into being a bigger entity in pop culture. That, of course, is William Muldoon from the 19th century. So thank you to William Muldoon. Big brand sponsor of cigarettes back in the 19th century and things of that nature.
Muldoon, but in all seriousness,
yes, yes. But in all seriousness, I think we owe a big thank you to the person who really founded and created WWE as we know it. There isn't a WWE without this man. I think we owe him a big thank you, Vince. Thank you to Vincent J. McMahon, the older Vincent J. McMahon. So thank you, Vincent J. McMahon. But in all seriousness, I think we owe a big congratulations to Michael Cole for being able to call a pay-per-view last night for the first time without an angry voice in his head. So we're really excited for Michael Cole going forward in any event.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff on the show. And if you have a super chat, you can actually hit the little dollar sign on your YouTube stream there, put a question in and the amount that you see fit, and we'll answer your questions throughout the show. It might be right when you ask it, depending on the topic, or it might be a little bit later, but we will get to all super chats on the show.
So where should we begin?
Let's kind of talk about a little bit of the stuff going on that maybe kind of led to all this shuffle of change, maybe here.
As you're guessing, trying to interpret the slides, where are we going here? So the Vince McMahon story is just, it keeps on keeping on. It was a big morning Monday morning. You know, last we spoke, it was WrestleMania Sunday a week ago, and we hadn't learned yet what we would learn on Monday. What did we know up to that point? We knew that on Friday, a week ago Friday, about 9 or so days ago, Vince McMahon had announced his retirement, had voluntarily resigned, apparently from the company, still majority voting member, still the largest shareholder. We didn't know what the catalyst was for his resignation, for his retirement, whatever you want to call it. I've been assured that resignation and retirement are interchangeable words in this case, at least in W's case. There is no pension. There's no pension plan that W employees, including Vince McMahon, are paying into. So I thought that, you know, maybe it was business partners. Maybe it was the TV partners, other business partners who had put the pressure on Vince and had said, you know, I don't know how excited we are to renew at a higher price for Raw and SmackDown if all this Vince scandal is going on in the background. That's what I figured. I'm much less sure of that now. And we had figured that, you know, maybe the Wall Street Journal, maybe Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, they're coming out with big stories, and maybe they still are. Wall Street Journal had one that we'll get to on Monday. But, you know, maybe it was advertisers, TV partners that were saying maybe it's time for Vince to go. But as it turns out, you know, because we had talked about this hierarchy of influence, and yes, Vince is at the top, but guess who has the second most influence? It's business partners. It's business partners. And that's it. And ultimately, though, Vince is going to do what he's going to do. And Vince could decide to go forward and say, I don't care what's going to happen with the business partners. I don't care what the financial consequences are. I want to control this company, and I'm not going to back down. And that's easy for me to imagine in the character of Vincent Kennedy McMahon. However, I think we need to revise our hierarchy of influence. I had not anticipated that there is, in fact, some entity that should be on top of the hierarchy of influence, even above Vince McMahon, and that is the federal government. We should have known. Back in the early 90s, the federal government almost took down Vince and the biggest matchup of his life, Vince McMahon versus the United States. The Wall Street Journal broke on Monday evening that the SEC is investigating him, and federal prosecutors, which I take to mean people from the Department of Justice, are investigating what's happening here. My speculation would be that, hey, look, you're a publicly traded company, and you spent some money here that you want to call personal expenses, but really they were company expenses. We'll get into why, but that's not something that you can just get away with. So we'll get into the detail here. WWE put out a press release on Monday morning announcing, among other things, that Paul Levesque will assume all responsibilities related to WWE's creative in addition to his regular duties. On Friday morning, remember on Friday morning prior to this, they had announced that Paul Levesque was now the executive vice president of talent relations. And now on... I can't even remember now. Was it Monday morning that we learned this, or was it Friday that we learned this?
I think it was Monday we learned the creative, because last Friday was the whole Lesnar walking out, and we were under the assumption that Pritchard was running the show, and then Monday it came out, and it was the first Raw under Triple H.
Right. Who walked up? Your favorite wrestler, Brock Lesnar?
Brock Lesnar, yes. Brock Lesnar.
That is right, I think. So, and I had asked WWE if, we'll get to some of these details here. So the 8K came out. What's an 8K? Do you know what an 8K is?
It is some type of tax. Is it some type of tax form for stocks?
It's an SEC form. Okay. It's basically something that you publish, if publish is the right word. I've read some language in here that makes me wonder whether publish is the right word. Anyway, maybe publish, but filing is maybe not the right word. I don't know. Anyway, it's a document that comes out to the public whenever there's anything that might be material news for investors, I believe is an accurate way to describe it. So whenever there's an earnings report, there's an 8K. Whenever there's something that's just important separate from that, there's an 8K. And there was an 8K. Monday morning. and what we had in this 8K. There's quite a bit of text here. I don't know that we need to read all of it. But they did also announce that they gave some preliminary financial results, too. I think in part to show, you know, hey, look, we're still in good financial shape. And in fact, their adjusted OEBITDA, their favorite profit metric, was higher than I think most any analyst, or at least the consensus of stock analysts, expected it to be. I had a working financial estimate that I compared their preliminary results to. They're a little bit more profitable than I had expected. So that is for Q2 I'm referring to here, for the period of April 1st to June 30th. So WE in good financial shape. They wanted to let you know that up front, and that they're not going to be able to report in the usual amount of time that they were. We were expecting August 4th, which would be this coming Thursday, to be WE's financial report, because it's usually, you know, about, I don't know, 5 or so weeks after the quarter ends, this past quarter ending on June 30th. Looking like it's going to be more like August 9th. Maybe. But anyway, that's all at the front of this 8K. Burying the lead deep in here into the 8K. Under item 8.01, other events, heading. The company has made a preliminary determination that certain payments that Vince McMahon agreed to make during the period of 2006 through 2022, including payments, including amounts paid and payable in the future, and that were not recorded. We've got this highlighted in red for the YouTube viewers here. And that were not recorded in the WWE consolidated financial statements should have been recorded as expenses in the quarters in which those agreements were made. The company identified unrecorded expenses totaling approximately $14.6 million. So they're referring here to the NDA payments, right, which we've been discussing for weeks. Non-disclosure agreement payments that Vince McMahon agreed to make with four women that we know of. We don't know their names, but four women who worked for WWE in various roles. The former paralegal is the first story that came out on June 15th, but there's also a former WWE talent. There's also two others that were referred to as a former manager and a former contractor. So people who worked for WWE that Vince McMahon had a great deal of power over, who he either allegedly sexually harassed or coerced into sex or had sexual relationships with, and so forth, and paid them a lot of money to not talk about that relationship, not talk about that experience, and to not disparage him. So do you remember, Chris? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say this point, too. And didn't in that first article, didn't Jerry McDivitt say that this was Vince's money, nothing mm-hmm. to do with, yeah, it was just, he paid it out of his own money, no issue here.
Right. There were no company monies spent on this, only Vince's personal money, which presumably would make it okay. But as it turns out, not okay. Why is this not okay? I'm sort of disappointed that we didn't figure this out ahead of time. So my understanding is, even though, and Tony Maglio of The Wrap has tweeted that, and it sounds like, you know, somebody who knows told him that the payments were made out of Vince McMahon's personal, he wired the money over, right? By the way, some of these payments are not completely paid yet. So he's made agreements, apparently, with some of the women to make long-term payments in installments. So some of these women still have money coming to them. That's been reported by the Wall Street Journal, and that would be consistent with the language that we see here in terms of what we see in the second line in parentheses, including amounts paid and payable in the future. So he's got long-term agreements to pay in multiple installments. So what I was getting to here, unrecorded expenses totaling approximately $14.6 million. That's what the company, the board, and perhaps their investigators have found. What did the Wall Street Journal report was the amount that Vince had paid that we knew about before this document came out? Do you remember?
Was it 12? I'm trying to remember, because it was 12.5, right? Yeah.
12, maybe a little bit more than 12.
Yeah.
So this is more than 12 million. This is 14.6 million. So that means there's some payments that they know about that the Wall Street Journal's reporting hasn't reported on yet. I mean, it could be, for all we know, it could be completely different payments. Probably not, though. There's probably some overlap there. Maybe there's one payment in addition that we haven't seen the Wall Street Journal refer to yet. Maybe there's more than one. But yes. So why is it that Vince McMahon's presumably personal payments that he made with personal money must be counted as company expenses? So my understanding is that just because because Vince McMahon used his personal money to pay off women so they wouldn't talk about his transgressions doesn't mean that in a publicly traded company that can be just ignored. Those payments were made not just to benefit him personally, but were made to protect the company. And because of that, they should have been recorded in WWE's published, they should have been included in and calculated into WWE's financial reporting. So that's a big problem, apparently. To take a more extreme financial scenario, hypothetically, imagine if WWE was struggling to be profitable, which is not the case, right? They're very profitable. But imagine if WWE was struggling to be profitable and Vince decided that, well, I'll just personally pay for the production of Raw and SmackDown for a year or something like that. I'll personally pay those millions and millions of dollars that it costs to produce Raw and SmackDown. The company won't have to pay for it. And ta-da, WWE's profitable now. And then, obviously, if that were the case, then WWE would trade on that more that better financial performance. I would think that would be defrauding shareholders. That would be a bad thing. And Vince McMahon would be in real big trouble legally because of that. Or at least he'd be under investigation, right? So, WWE very profitable, but $14.6 million is not immaterial in one quarter. That's what they want to make clear here. So what do they go on to say here? All payments underlying the unrecorded expenses were or will be paid by Vince McMahon personally. While the company continues to evaluate the impact on previously reported financial statements, the company has preliminarily determined that while the amount of unrecorded expenses were not material in any individual period, I believe that means quarters, in which the unrecorded expenses arose, the aggregate amount altogether of unrecorded expenses would be material if recorded entirely in the second quarter. So if they just caught up and just put it all into Q2, $14.6 million would be material. What does material mean? Can you guess, Gull, what material means in this context?
I would say, like, anything that could affect outcomes of the company or stuff like that, like
any, and we'll get into this later when we talk about material non-public information, but material means, yeah, basically anything that a reasonable investor would consider to be important when valuing the company. So $14.6 million in expenses would basically come off of WWE's profit metrics, and that would substantially lower WWE's profit metrics, profit results. So, but if they, you know, spread this over the course of 2019 to the present, it wouldn't be as big of a deal. So they go on to say in this 8K, accordingly, the company currently anticipates that it will revise its previously issued financial statements to record the unrecorded expenses in the applicable periods for the years ended December 31st, 2019, 2020, 2021, as well as the first quarter of 2022. So big, big news in the WrestleNomics world. I'm going to have to update my spreadsheets. WWE is going to have to update a lot of their spreadsheets too. I'm sure that's what they're working on right now. So they're going to go back to 2019 and forward and I guess put those expenses in where they think they belong to, you know, more truthfully, accurately illustrate what their expenses were during those times. Yes.
Is it just because you can only go back so far to do like financial analyzation as far as adding this stuff, or because are we to be under the impression that he didn't have any of these NDAs before 2019?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Because I feel like that can't be a thing. I feel like he would have had them before, but I mean, I don't know. But
well, The Wall Street Journal reports that so the former talent, who is paid, I believe, $7.5 million, or at least, you know, that's what the agreement is, it's not paid out yet in its entirety. That was the Wall Street Journal reported that agreement was made in 2018. And some of these, you know, and that was, you know, from an incident of coerced oral sex, reportedly, that happened in 2005. Now 2005, that happened, and then some years later, 2018, the former talent and lawyers came to Vince and they made this agreement. But maybe some of those, I mean, we could probably look through the Wall Street Journal report again and look at when they might say in there when the agreements were made. But yeah, that's a good question. So, but I don't know the answer.
I have another one real quick for the payments. The payments that have continuation with them, are they going to have to put that as
going forward?
On going forward, because he's a majority shareholder.
I would think they're company expenses, and I think they would. I would guess they would be recorded in the quarters in which those payments were made.
Haunt them for a while.
Yeah, and who knows what the installments are? They could be hundreds of thousands of dollars every month or something like that. On WWE's scale, you know, WWE made $1.1 billion in revenue in 2021. You know, those expenses might be pretty minor on their financial reporting. But we'll see. So WWE expects to do their financial reporting, or it's working with the goal of doing their financial reporting on Tuesday, August 9th. That is not this coming Tuesday, but the Tuesday after that. But there's no assurance that WWE will actually be able to report at that time. There's also an interesting sentence in here where they say, in light of the unrecorded expenses and related facts, the company expects to conclude that its internal control over financial reporting was not effective as a result of one or more material weaknesses. That is conspicuous. I don't know what that means, though. Some problem with financial reporting that they should have caught this, but then again, if Vince is concealing it, who can be responsible? Are there people responsible for this other than Vince, I guess, is a question. As previously announced, a special committee of independent members of the board is conducting an investigation into the alleged misconduct by Vince. That investigation remains ongoing. So that's W saying, hey, the board is still investigating. This doesn't mean that the investigation is over with. And then finally, they end this section headed other events with a very ominous couple sentences, or one sentence, I suppose. The company has also received and may receive in the future regulatory, investigative, and enforcement inquiries, subpoenas, or demands arising from or related to I can't read what that says, or related to or in connection with these matters. And I read that on Monday morning. This came out, I believe, just before the market opened, around 8 o'clock or so. And I said, wow, that's ominous. More on that in a moment. Before the market opened, though, on Monday, remember, Vince McMahon now out of power. Uncertainty, perhaps. It's what we've talked about for years, perhaps decades. Vince McMahon is out of power. What will this stock do? Monday morning, Barclays analyst David Joyce raised his price target from $57 to $61, which is less than the stock was valued at, but nonetheless raising his target. Alan Gould from Loop Capital raising his rating of hold on W stock to buy. Alan Gould also talking about how the company's more likely to be acquired now that Vince is out of power. MKM Partners, Eric Handler, raising his price target from $70 to $79. So well above the current value. And Monday morning, the market opens, and this stock goes way up. It goes up on that day by about 8%, I believe, on the speculation that maybe WWE will be acquired. It calmed down after that. And we're settling now with WWE stock at what, as of the close of the market on Friday, $69.31, according to Google Finance. That's where the stock is at. If we look at what the stock was valued at on, we say, like, the Friday before Vince announced his retirement, it was $66.22, now $69. So it's, you know, $3 more. It's about 5%. The company is valued by the stock market about 5% more now since Vince announced his retirement, his exit from the company. Which, you know, we didn't all, of course, see it transpiring this way, but we've seen in WWE's annual report for years. I want to say that this is mentioned in every annual report that I've ever read for WWE, I've ever looked through, going back to since they've been public in 99, where they list many, many risk factors. These are things that investors should be aware of that might affect the value of this company. And one of those risk factors has always been this. I'm going to read this. Golo.
Yeah. The unexpected loss of the services of Vince and K. McMahon could adversely affect our ability to create popular characters and creative storylines, or could otherwise adversely affect our operating results. In addition to serving as chairman, our board of directors and chief executive officer, Mr. McMahon leads the creative team that develops the storylines and the characters for our programming, including our television, WWE Network, and other programming and live events. The loss of Mr. McMahon due to unexpected retirement, disability, death, or other unexpected termination for any reason could have material adverse effect on our ability to create popular characters and creative storylines, or could otherwise adversely affect our operating results. So that was the whole thing in context there.
Yes. I guess as Jesse said a few weeks ago, I think it was a good interpretation. Jesse Collins said that, you know, I think you can just read that as Vince McMahon believes that he is essential to the business, and the business may be adversely affected if he were to unexpectedly leave the company.
I do find perception funny on this. I feel wrestling wise, I think the majority of the feelings, people are excited for something different. Like, wow, like, who's going to be pushed in Triple H and all that. But from like non-wrestling aspect of it, I don't know if people really are interested in a non Vince McMahon WWE until they see like proven results.
Yes. Like we'll get to that. So I would have to, and I've only been covering WWE business to anything near the current degree since about 2015 or so. Maybe even later than that, right? W Network kind of and forward. So it's hard to put myself back into prior times. But I've been saying for a while, I think that's a very overrated risk factor, the notion that Vince would not be around here. This is a risk factor that sure, stock analysts take seriously, investors may take seriously, he's the founder. In all normal business situations, that's probably a pretty big deal. You know, if the person who founded this company, who's very much one-on-one associated with this company, leaves, what's going to happen? Uncertainty. And uncertainty leads to, you know, share price instability. But I think Vince has been, especially now with Nick Khan in the role that he's in, where I think, you know, strategically, W will be fine, at least as long as he's there. And yes, he's got a 5-year term as in his employment agreement that will expire in 2025. I don't know what will happen after that, but W, you know, Vince has been more of a detriment, certainly in his creative role. And I think he's left a lot of money on the table that is obfuscated by the fact that WWE has benefited tremendously from business-to-business relationships while eroding their consumer sales, consumer metrics, including their TV ratings, ticket sales, merchandise sales, consumer product sales. And there's a lot of value that WWE could have attained and could have grown in excess to what they currently have if only someone other than Vince McMahon was in charge of creative, a role that he held on to tightly until the federal government apparently got involved. The Wall Street Journal comes out with a story on Monday evening. Publishing time, 6:11 p.m. Eastern. Headline, U.S. investigations hastened McMahon retirement from WWE, sources say. And the key reporting here from the Wall Street Journal, from the same reporters, by the way, Ted Mann and Joe Palazzolo, who have reported the earlier reports on WWE and the NDAs and the payments made by Vince. And they report that the Securities and Exchanges Commission, the SEC, and federal prosecutors have launched inquiries into payments made by Mr. McMahon to settle allegations of sexual misconduct, according to people familiar with the matter. So that makes clear what that 8K paragraph was referring to in terms of inquiries, regulatory investigations, and things of that nature, if you will. The SEC and federal prosecutors have launched inquiries into payments made by Vince McMahon. So they also write in here, in the past, Mr. McMahon told members of the board and W executives that he would remain in the job until he could no longer work, according to people familiar with the matter. So there's that. That saying what? Just to confirm, Vince McMahon had no intention of retiring.
This was a resignation.
Semantics, I suppose. But there's no difference between retirement and resignation, whether you're 77, 76, or 36. It's all the same in WWE, is my understanding. You know, there isn't any different process. So there's all that. Yes, this reminds me of a time in 1993 when the federal government indicted Vince McMahon under investigation for just distribution of steroids in cooperation with George Zaharian, the infamous doctor who is prescribing wrestlers steroids. And of course, he was acquitted. Let's give him his due. Yes, he was acquitted. This is the New York Times clipping from July 23rd, 1994. A promoter of wrestling is acquitted. So in the real life battle in the courtroom, Vince McMahon was indeed acquitted of that indictment of being charged with conspiracy to distribute. So we have here an amended version of the hierarchy of influence that we should remember forevermore. Not just Vince McMahon at the top, and arguably he's not at the top anymore. I would say he's not. I know there'll be continued conspiracy theories about just how much he's lurking in the shadows and how much he's pulling the strings. It's like, man, working in the background, much like Pat Patterson, much like Vince Russo, you know, sending emails and things of that nature and working behind the scenes. In any event, the most powerful person in WWE perhaps was not Vince McMahon all along, but was the federal government. So there's that. Moving on.
If you have any super chats on any of this, just a reminder, if you're watching on YouTube there, you can click the dollar sign with your question and put any amount that you see fit.
Okay. So with all this transpiring, I think it's quite obvious that, so everyone's talking about this lately. This brings to mind, Soviet Russia, of course. Soviet Russia comes to mind here. Brings to mind a period where Nikita Khrushchev had come to power in Soviet Russia, and tell us a little bit. You love history, fellow.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited. We're gonna kind of talk about this era. So, de-Stalinization consisted of a series of political reforms in the Soviet Union after the death of longtime leader Joseph Stalin in 1953, and the thaw brought about an ascension of Nikita Khrushchev to power and his 1956 secret speech on the cult of personality and its consequences, which denounced the Stalinist cult of personality and the Stalinist political system. Monuments to Stalin were toppled, his name was removed from places, buildings, and the state anthem, and his mummified body was removed from the Lenin Mausoleum and buried elsewhere. While de-Stalinization had been quietly underway ever since Stalin's death, the watershed event was Khrushchev's speech entitled On the Cult of Personality and Its Consequences Concerning Stalin. He spoke to a closed session of the 20th Party Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, delivering an address laying out some of the Stalin's crimes and the conditions of insecurity, fear, and even desperation created by Stalin. Khrushchev shocked his listeners by denouncing Stalin's dictatorial rule and his cult of personality and inconsistent with communist and party ideology.
Yeah. So I'm not comparing the crimes that Stalin did to the crimes that Vince did. I think there are some interesting similarities between how a cult of personality like Vince and people are responding to Vince's removal from power, and how people responded to the, you know, the deaths of leaders like Stalin and even Kim Jong Il, where we've got, like, you know, people paying tribute to Vince, you know, almost as if he's died, and almost you know, as if he's completely responsible for the world we live in. And I think there's, you know, are we going to see now a de-Vincification of WWE?
I think, much like Stalin, Vince rose. I mean, Stalin made the Soviet Union a legit superpower, right? And Vince made the WWE a legit sports entertainment, pro wrestling power. And I think now that he's out of the picture, you can kind of take a look and go, well, maybe some of these practices were unnecessary and we could still be on top without them. Obviously, much different type of practices, but when it comes to creative and the way maybe people were micromanaged when it comes down to it.
So I think there's also, though, there's a lot that should change, undoubtedly. And I think Paul Levesque knows that. And his heart, you can't give him truth serum, but if he could, I think he would agree that there's a lot that should change. And the way that he ran NXT and the product that he put out is evident of that, in my view. But there's incentive, at least here in the short term, for him not to change too much. But we'll get into what we saw on SummerSlam. I think there's, especially on Monday is the day that he's announced as head of creative. Whoa, that's a change. And you don't want to send a message to the mainstream media community and the investor community, the stock analyst community, that, whoa, there's change. Whoa, Raw is way different. I think there's a big incentive for him to not rock the boat. There may be political incentive for him to not create enemies or to intensify tense relationships that he may have with other executives in WWE, to be this sort of, if you will, Joe Biden-like force to sort of calm the community. Yeah. And we're moving forward with things being calmer here and being you know, being not as tense as perhaps they were before. So Fightful had a report, though, on Monday. I don't know if it was the comparable to the speech on cult of personality and its consequences, but nonetheless, signaling on Monday night to talent that things might be different.
Yeah, this is what it entailed. Triple H led a talent meeting at Raw on Monday and promised the talent transparency when it comes to to the some that don't feel it existed under the previous regime. He also said that he wants open lines of communication between himself and talent. Waiting for hours for the opportunity to maybe speak to Vince McMahon had become commonplace in recent years. With the face time with him dwindling, we were also told that Triple H said he wants work to be fun.
So, according to that report from Fightful, it sounds like an acknowledgement from Paul Levesque that, hey, look, maybe things weren't as good as you wanted them to be. And I'm acknowledging that, and we're going to try to make it better. Not a repudiation. Everyone's talking about, is the language, are we going to start saying pro wrestling on WWE programming? Are we going to stop saying WWE Universe? Are things going to be less scripted? Will there be fewer DQ finishes? By the way, the very first match that happened on Raw under his supervision, DQ finish. Will things be drastically different? Will Raw open up with everyone on the ramp and Triple H with the microphone going one by one? I give you your first name back. You're now Austin Theory. You're now, you know, all these people. Chad Gable, he's now just Gable. Is that right? Am I thinking of that right?
I think they're still calling him Chad Gable.
Who else has lost their first name? Before we dwell on this.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I'm trying to think. I can think of all the actual name changes. The guys from NXT UK, James and Drake, they've lost their name again.
Anyway,
but I know what you're saying. Yeah, there was, and we'll probably get into a little bit. There was a couple changes though that I can definitely see, especially on SummerSlam.
Yeah, but we have this photo that people can see on YouTube of from Brandon Ross posted to Twitter. At Madison Square Garden, which is serendipitous that the first event with someone other than Vince McMahon overseeing creative was, maybe SmackDown was that too, but the first TV taping under the supervision of Paul Levesque as head of creative was at Madison Square Garden. And here's the photo of Brandon Ross taking a photo of Triple H on the ramp at Madison Square Garden. He did speak to reporters briefly in Nashville at this tryout. And we have this clip from Rick Uccino on Twitter. This is a clip you'll hear in the background. Nick Hausman of Wrestling Inc. asking Triple H the question. That's the slide. Here we go.
Triple H, I gotta ask, you're in charge of creative now. How is the product gonna be different underneath you as opposed to when Vince McMahon had the book?
I'm gonna watch the show.
Come on, that's not an answer.
That is an answer. If you asked a question and I answered you, that's an answer.
That's not the answer.
Right? Yeah. No, I know it isn't, but that's how it works. You gotta watch the show. Look, this is the longest running stuff on TV. We say it all the time, right? Raw, SmackDown, SummerSlam, just everything that we're doing, right? There are a massive pair of shoes to fill that I'm trying in some way to step into, but I do not dream for 1 second that I can fill those shoes. By myself, it's going to take, period, but by myself, it's going to take a lot of us. It's going to take a team. It's going to take everybody here to fill those shoes and continue this on, but we will. We will. The intent is to continue the legacy of what has been going on, what made me fall in love with this business that he created, and to take it to new levels, to take it beyond where it is now. The only way we're going to do that is with a team. That's with Steph, that's with Nick Khan, that's with myself, that's with Kevin Dunn, that's with everybody that is here, that is with all this talent. We have the greatest, hardest working talent in the world. I have no doubt in my mind with this team that we can do it. Not an inkling of doubt. It's just a lot of hard work, and we're all going to grind, and we're all going to make it do, because we have the greatest fans in the world, and we're going to make sure that they get everything they want out of this product, and then some.
Okay. So, everything is normal. Everybody's going to pitch in and work hard to take over all these responsibilities. My God, Vince is... it's going to be so hard to fill his shoes, but we're going to do it, and everything's going to be okay. And I think what W doesn't want here are mainstream headlines, or even perhaps, you know, not too many wrestling headlines. Let there be optimism, sure. But not too many headlines that say things like, major changes ahead for WWE. I don't think they want that bleeding into understandings and valuations of the company. That leads to uncertainty and the perception that Vince, only Vince, he alone could lead this company. I don't think they want further attention and thought given to that. Notably,
He talked about Stephanie McMahon. He talked about Nick Khan. It takes a team.
And who? What other names did he mention?
He mentioned Vince earlier.
He mentioned Stephanie. Then, he said we'll do it with Nick Khan and Kevin Dunn.
Kevin Dunn, yes. Oh, yeah.
Somebody that he's probably not closely aligned with. There have been... I know Meltzer has talked about how, you know, the day that Triple H and Stephanie get into power, Kevin Dunn probably won't last. And I've heard things that where people have told me that, you know, Stephanie and probably Paul Levesque, they're not great friends with Kevin Dunn. But I think there's definitely an incentive for him to even, you know, at least publicly facing, be nice to people that maybe he's not friendly with, that maybe are his enemies, to say, look, this is the best thing for the company here, and it's the best thing, which is the best thing ultimately for my survival here, is to make sure that everything is stable and everybody's confident in the future, whether that's people internally, whether that's people externally who are valuing the company. There's not going to be dramatic change here, and there's huge responsibility for us to take in.
He brings up a team, right? And obviously he discusses the individuals you just talked about, but I would imagine him taking on the creative role as well as the, you know, executive vice, president of talent relations, that there is he's maybe somebody else will be very integral in that talent relations role or the creative role. I mean, because that's a lot for this guy to take on.
I mean, John Pollock and Dave Meltzer were talking on, I think it was Monday, you can find on the Post Wrestling YouTube, about how, well, maybe a different person should be, maybe he should be overseeing the talent relations role, but maybe it should ultimately be another person who is delegated to lead that, perhaps. And maybe there's good, you know, conflict of interest reasons for that as well, that maybe the person who's driving creative should not be the person who's driving talent relations in any event.
And we also, too, when we were talking about this, we thought Kevin Nunn would be out the door very quickly and Bruce Pritchard could stay on forever. But Bruce Pritchard was not mentioned by Triple H there. And I wonder.
No, but I don't take that to be that meaningful, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he mentioned Kevin Nunn. And if he didn't mention Bruce Pritchard, though, there'd be somebody else that he left out. Or if he did mention Bruce Pritchard, you know, I don't take that to be hugely meaningful. And so you watched SummerSlam?
Yes, I did watch SummerSlam, yes.
So what's the next slide here? Is first match is Becky Lynch versus Bianca Belair. And after that match, spoiler alert, after Bianca Belair wins and Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair shake hands, we have the return of Bayley, who's been out for more than a year. And then, even more unexpectedly, Dakota Kai comes out, whose contract had expired. And Io Shirai comes out, who has a new name. Have you seen this? She's no longer Io Shirai.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of saw that, but I wasn't sure what was going on.
She's now Io Sky.
Io Sky, okay.
And it's not I-O-E-O, it's I-Y-O. Triple H never sought the need to rename her in NXT. I got the impression, listening to him talk publicly, that Triple H was very high on Io Shirai and thought she was one of the best wrestlers in the world of any gender. Vince probably saw no interest in using her.
Well, her role was minimized in NXT 2.0 after Triple H was no longer power there.
Yeah. Vince saw no desire to use Dakota Kai on television. So this is a big difference here. This is not a huge difference, but there's definitely a different booker now. Yeah, I tweeted to that effect.
I think there's this. You mentioned in the beginning of the show, Michael Cole definitely had an energy about him last night. That was definitely a little more upbeat, a little bit different.
He mentioned Dan Engler's name.
Yes, on air. Yeah, the referee names being mentioned.
He mentioned a cameraman's first name, I believe, Stu or something. Yeah. Which is not something that I would expect to happen.
No.
If Vince was in his ear.
And also, too, the return of Max Dupree. Like, I think that needs to be said, too, as we heard that Vince wanted him out of the role, and then here he is back now that Vince is gone.
Yeah. So at the risk of overanalyzing this, I think what we see here is sort of this compromise of, I don't know if Triple H, of his own accord, would rename Io Shirai. But maybe he's accommodating other opinions here. Maybe he's accommodating the opinion of a Kevin Dunn and or a Bruce Pritchard to say, all right, you want to, maybe that name's not good. Okay, we'll accept your idea. I'm not going to rule with an iron fist and say only what I like is going to go. But we are going to bring back Io Shirai, and we are going to bring into the main roster her and Dakota Kai, who Vince probably had no interest in using. Fightful reporting that. Sean Ross Sapp had heard that a stable consisting of these three, Io Sky, I suppose we should call her, Bayley and Dakota Kai, had been pitched for quite a while ago before Dakota was released, her contract expired, and Vince McMahon rejected it. So,
Tim B has interesting super chat. How did Lance Storm know who Kai and Sky were without 5 video packages? I'm sure these old heads won't have the same complaints they had about New Japan Pro Wrestling.
I suppose this is something that that Lance Storm has complained about, that there aren't enough explanation of who's who.
Video packages and promo packages and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. I err on the side of explain things when things aren't known, but anticipate that fans will pick up what's happening from context clues and perhaps just from listening to commentary. And that's kind of what commentary is there for, without hitting people over the head. I think we've, you know, and this is going to be a regular theme for the next couple years, probably, is that Vince McMahon has instilled and ingrained, maybe more than a couple years, has instilled and ingrained all of these compulsions into wrestling minds, people in power who make decisions, and fans who analyze it and talk about it, has instilled all of these compulsions as regular practice. That must be good, because the most powerful company in the world does it, such as anticipating that all fans are completely ignorant and empty-headed about everything, so we must make everything as obvious as possible, even if that insults our most ardent fans who are inclined to spend the most money. Maybe that was more effective in a prior era. Maybe that was more effective in the 90s, in the 80s. And I think what Vince's era and what Vince's disciples don't understand, don't appreciate enough, is how the world has changed and how marketing has changed in terms of what's the most effective form of marketing that there is. It's not running ads. It's not crafting an amazing public relations message. You can do that. That's fine. But the most effective form of marketing in this era, when everyone has a device in their hand that can market your product as authentically and organically as possible. I can tell my friends, you know, in the 90s, my friends and I would talk about wrestling and what happened the night before and whether or not it was good to watch. But now, not just that can happen, but people can talk about wrestling and promote it essentially on social media and beyond. And those people should be thought of as promoters, in the sort of net promoter score sense. Those people are promoters. And I think that very much explains why New Japan became popular in the United States and in English-speaking countries. I think it very much explains why at various times Ring of Honor had a improving brand value and did better business when it did better business. I think that explains why Impact, Total Nonstop Action, fell from grace, is because you had detractors out there that told people that this company is burning me over and over again and it's violating my trust. That's why, to the degree that it did from 2017 and forward, WWE declined in consumer popularity, because it repeatedly burned the trust of its most ardent fans, who communicated publicly that it burned its trust. So the most ardent wrestling fans can be your promoters, if you're willing to, I want to say, like, manipulate them as such, rather than say, these people will never be satisfied with anything, because you don't get it. You don't get how to appeal to them while appealing to the rest of your market. And you believe that that's impossible to satisfy this mythical mainstream audience while satisfying this purportedly mercurial hardcore audience.
And one of the things I'm very interested to see in this new regime is that when somebody organically gets over, if they're going to continue, if they'll actually roll with that. Because obviously that was something that Vince McMahon just did not do with, you know, Zack Ryder and Rusev. And I mean, there's countless others, Fandango. And, you know, I'm very intrigued to see if the first person that just organically gets over, if like Triple H, and they actually go, you know what, yes, we're going to strap a rocket on this person, or no, this is not who we have in our script to be a star.
Why do you think Vince was that way? Why did he?
Because he didn't create it.
Yeah, and it was not about, it's not something that he controlled. And yeah, I think he created from scratch. I think he was still insecure about, you know, who's the big star when Vince came to power and when Vince went national.
Hulk Hogan.
Who created Hulk Hogan? Vince?
No. Vern Gagne.
Vern? Not Vern. I think he's still insecure about that, and about the fact that you could say, well, you just got the company from your dad. No, I it was in a loan. I paid him in a balloon payment. And he did. but he wouldn't have been in the position to do that unless Vincent J. McMahon was his dad. And as Vince won the Monday Night War and won the first war against Crockett and others and became more secure in his position and more lacking in competition, he was able to become even more Vince and to, you know, indulge his tendencies to, you know, to not embrace people who had the perception of coming from elsewhere.
We saw those insecurities just recently a year ago when he's mentioning Ted Turner, when somebody asked him a question about Tony Khan and AEW. It's like, it's still living rent-free in his brain. Anybody that actually really challenged him and challenged his power and made him not think like he was in control of this business stuck with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be really curious to hear, you know, his honest thoughts about current wrestling, about his, you know, the rise of AEW and things like that. But I don't know that we'll ever hear it unless Conrad signs him up for a podcast series.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Speaking of AEW,
the only reason that AEW exists, well, there's at least five reasons, right? And one of them was Tony Khan saw that the deal that WWE made in 2018, they got their TV rights fees almost quadrupled. They got them more than tripled. So there's a lot of money there. And not only is there a lot of money there, but the demand for that live sports content is increasing. You know, I believe that WWE is still going to get an increase in the following deal that they're going to make next year. 1.5x is the base case. I believe that, you know, AEW is going to get a strong upgrade as well. So that financial opportunity is there, first and foremost. Secondly, funding. You got to have a lot of money if you're going to run an expensive production like AEW. That's something that's going to be comparable to what WWE does in terms of the cost to produce such an entertainment event. Fortunately, his dad is a billionaire. Third, he had the leadership, he had a sports background, and not just that, but unlike people who led TNA, he has a better understanding of wrestling and of wrestling fans. And I don't know that the leadership at TNA ever had that. And then fourth, not only is this, you know, an opportunity to just create a second wrestling brand, but there was something that the incumbent dominant brand of wrestling was lacking, and that was the ability to attract talent, because people didn't want to go there because they were afraid that, you know, Kenny Omega, maybe they were willing to consider it, or at least were willing to consider it out of leverage. But, you know, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks and maybe Cody at the time were considering going to WWE, but probably felt that they were going to be wasted, or maybe they would have a run in NXT and then, you know, they wouldn't be creatively satisfied. Pay them lots of money, maybe they would have made millions of dollars. But if they went to WWE, Vince wouldn't get them. He would warehouse them. And then you have this population of fans that the success, the relative success of AEW has proved exist. Fans who are dissatisfied with the quality of WWE's content and who were turned off and were hungry for an alternative. And we're already engaging with alternatives like NXT, like New Japan, like Ring of Honor, like various indies. So that happened. And now, two of those factors, got five of these here, two of those factors that made the business opportunity as robust as it is for AEW, I don't know that those two of these factors are as strong as they were. That is the availability of talent because of their dissatisfaction, their reticence to go to WWE. And I don't know if fans are going to be as dissatisfied in WWE going forward as they have been over the last at least 5 years. So that is not a good thing for AEW's business. In terms of a market value, if WWE is sold, which, you know, CNBC is reporting that, according to people familiar with the matter, they're not interested, they're not pursuing a sale. I believe there's truth to that. But that doesn't mean they're not going to be sold sometime in the next year, 2 years, or whatever. If WWE is sold, it's probably going to be in excess, it could very well be in excess of their market capital, which is currently about $5 billion. Let's say they're sold. Let's imagine a scenario in which they're sold for $6 or $7 billion. That means that they're worth more than they're currently being valued at, or that you would assess their value at. And if WWE is more valuable, than they've been valued at for the last couple of years, that probably reflects on AEW. Not that AEW is going to be worth anywhere near what the market value of WWE is, but it increased. If AEW were a publicly traded company, if WWE is sold for a lot of money, if WWE is sold for more than its market capital, that would positively impact the AEW stock if it were a publicly traded company, which it of course is not. On the other hand, the opportunity and advantage that AEW has in some ways over WWE is perhaps lessened now, because you might have fans that are actually satisfied by the biggest company in the world. You might have talent that could actually get creatively satisfied. And I might not, if I'm a talented wrestler, say, I don't know if I want to go to WWE because I think they're just going to waste me. And, I could have great matches and have a great time at NXT under Triple H's supervision. But the moment that I go up to Vince McMahon, I'm going to be deemed as too short, and my muscles aren't big enough. And, I don't look enough like a bodybuilder for him. So why should I bother? Even though maybe I'll make millions of dollars. Oh, AEW exists and they're willing to pay me $1 million. Well, maybe I'll just go there and I'll have the best of both worlds. So, not great news for AEW in my view. Even though, yeah, there's some mix there in terms of speculation on a sale. Might increase your value. Although I think for Tony Khan, ultimately, though, he's not necessarily there to... Maybe he ultimately will be there to sell AEW to a major media company someday. But he's... I think he's very interested too in becoming a big player in the wrestling world.
Tony Khan was on Busted Open on Wednesday, right? I think it was. And he addressed this, and he had to bring up the fact that Adam Cole had a contract till I think 2027, and Aleister Black was on Malakai Black to say was on a 5-year contract. And, he's very upset at the reports that guys would leave and go to WWE because of the new creative. And that's not how I read the report. I read the report that there were basically that guys would have stayed with WWE had Triple H been head of creative. And this is a question that now you have to look at who could be available or who is available right now. I think a big part of AEW's fan service is bringing in the next hot free agent. They've been doing that a lot lately, right? Well, let's just talk about Johnny Gargano, for example. He could be that next hot free agent to show up on Dynamite, but now Triple H is in charge, and he was, obviously worked with Triple H closely in NXT. Triple H, I would imagine, values Johnny Gargano very highly. Does he go, you know what? Now I can trust that WWE will use me properly on the main roster. I'm going back to WWE. And I think that happens in a lot of scenarios. Does that happen if Adam Cole, if Triple H was in charge and Adam Cole's contract expired? And and we could speculate on and on and on, but I think that fan service that Tony Khan does by the next hottest free agent is going to be less frequent.
Yeah. And I think there's even talent that Triple H will value, who an audience will value, that I don't think Tony Khan values. Like, I don't think Tony Khan values Johnny Gargano. Otherwise, he would have brought him in already. I don't think he valued Dakota Kai. Otherwise, she would have been brought in already to AEW. I think... So that's a revelation, though, that he's got Adam Cole. He had Adam Cole and Malakai Black signed to apparently 6-year deals. Yeah, I think Adam Cole's now 1 year into his deal almost. So that would imply that Adam Cole signed a 6-year deal last year with AEW. That's a long time.
Those are long wrestling contracts. Usually we see around 3 years, right?
Right. And in 6 years, AEW will have a new TV deal. And who knows how much revenue they'll be generating at that point. A lot more than they will be currently if it's what I've speculated. It could be as much as 3X, 4X, 5X of their current deal. You would argue that I should be paid more if this company is now generating... It's hard to do the math based on one deal, but that's by far their biggest source of income is their US TV deal. It's what, $44 million on an average annual basis. I guess that they're making around $100 million in revenue. So that's about half of their money. And if you multiply that by three or four or five times, maybe your pay should go way up too. I think Tony, you see this in scrums sometimes too. I think Tony has a way of interpreting questions as being threatening in ways that the people asking the questions do not intend.
You mentioned how Tony Khan values talent, right? And like Johnny Gargano has been out there for a little bit. Dakota Kai has. So do you think the first example to see how this is going to play out will be Sasha Banks?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, does she go back now that it's a new creative direction, or does she go to AEW? So
we'll see. If I were betting, I would expect Sasha Banks to go back to WWE.
I thought she was going to be the one coming out with Bayley last night or helping. Yeah.
Because I think, I would anticipate that Sasha's and Naomi's issues were largely with Vince and perhaps with Johnny Ace, with John Laurinaitis. Mm-hmm. And both those people don't appear to be coming back to WWE anytime soon, if ever. I'm sure Sasha Banks has some sort of relationship with Triple H, and they clearly worked together in NXT and had relative success. So there may be a great deal of trust there. And if I were a talented female wrestler looking at AEW, I don't know if I would be as excited about going there to work for Tony Khan as I would be excited about going to WWE to work for Triple H.
Yeah.
And that's going to be an increasingly important dichotomy going forward as perhaps women's wrestling becomes a more important part of what fans demand. Women's wrestling has been historically disadvantaged going back to because of how they've been presented, because of how they've been trained or not trained. They've been told not to wrestle like the guys and things like that for decades, and that's only starting to resolve itself. And as that increasingly resolves itself, women's wrestling will become better. There'll be more and more talented female wrestlers, and that will become a more valuable part of a wrestling program. And I'm not sure that Tony Khan values women's wrestling in the way that he values men's wrestling. Why? Because of how they've recruited to this point and who they've not recruited, and because of where you see women positioned on the show. Now, yes, there are some women that AEW Tony Khan has pushed hard, including Britt Baker, including Jade Cargill. But we see almost every episode of Dynamite, women are slotted in this sort of viscera spot, quarter five, quarter six, quarter seven. Women have almost never, I don't know that there's ever been a women's match that opened Dynamite. You'd have to check on that. In the last year, we did that study a couple weeks ago. There might have been a promo in quarter one from a woman wrestler. I don't know that there's ever been an opening match on Dynamite. There's been the Mercedes Martinez and Deonna Purrazzo match, that main event at Dynamite. There's obviously been the memorable Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker match from St. Patrick's Day 2021. Very few and far between is the point, and those are the exception.
All right, yeah, we will.
Have I incited the chat into a riot with those comments?
I don't think so. I mean, there's a lot of conversations going on in the chat.
Okay. Moving on to W headquarters. So this was we're going to talk about the stock blackout period. What is a stock blackout period? Do you know, Chris Cole?
So is that just that is a time period that if you are an employee and your shares were from being an employee, you cannot trade them, right? Like you can't you just can't do any movement on them now, but that would it only be shares that you got because you're an employee, not like if you bought on your own.
Any shares.
Any shares. So, okay.
So here's my understanding. WWE's insider trading policy is public on their corporate website, and I read it recently, the other day. Basically, if you're an executive vice president or higher, if you're a member of the board of directors, you cannot trade WWE stock anytime between the end of the quarter, so June 30th, for example, through the two trading days after WWE's earnings report. Let's say they report on August 9th, two Wednesdays from now. That's a Tuesday. So you wouldn't be able to trade until after what would be, what, August 11th. I don't know if you'd be able to trade on August 11th, but at least, you know, on August 12th would be the earliest that you could probably make a trade. Perhaps there are other restrictions, too, that we don't know about. So on Friday, two Fridays ago, on the day, you know, I believe this is July 22nd, the day that Vince McMahon put out the tweet and the press release that he is retired from WWE. Just a little while after that evening, WWE sent out a message to all staff, signed apparently by Jim Langham, who is the senior vice president and assistant general counsel for WWE, who appears to be, you know, in charge of this insider trading policy. And the message said, this is to all staff, please be advised, in light of recent developments, the company's trading window has closed effective immediately for all employees. Until further notice, you are prohibited from any purchases or sales of company securities. You are also instructed not to speak with others about this note. That part at the end there, you're instructed not to speak with others about this note. Sounds scary. What is that about? That is consistent with their policy. That is already public, that you're not supposed to even tell anybody that there's a blackout in effect, presumably because that would say, oh, there's something happening. I'm guessing is the intent there. In any event, this is a story that we reported on Thursday, I believe, after seeing the message from multiple people. It's normal for what WWE calls designated persons to be not allowed to trade, to be prohibited from trading during this time between end of quarter and reporting on that quarter, designated persons being major executives or members of the board of directors. Or it would also be normal for anybody who WWE deems, or perhaps you yourself should be aware of this, if you have what's called non-public information. And you don't even have to be a WWE employee to be in possession of material non-public information. Let's say you're talking to a WWE employee and they tell you some material non-public information, and then because of that information that they relay to you, whoa, you know something that the rest of the market doesn't, you make a trade to advantage yourself. Can't do that. Not saying it doesn't happen in the stock market broadly. Probably does. But you're not supposed to do that, and I don't believe that that's legal. You might find yourself in some trouble. Some Martha Stewart-like trouble if you do that. Major executives, board members being prohibited from trading stock, normal. People with material non-public information being prohibited from trading stock, normal. All some 800-plus employees of WWE being prohibited from trading stock, not normal. The entire company. Until further notice. So it's not even clear, does this end a couple days after the earnings report does come out? Not clear when you're going to be able to trade your stock units. How do employees come to have stock? They're often given stock awards as part of their compensation. Yeah. So if you were planning on liquidating some stock to take care of something financially, can't do that for now. So that's happening. I did reach out to WWE, a spokesperson, and to the assistant general counsel, Jim Langham, neither of whom responded to comment on this story. So that's what's happening. It does lead one to wonder, is WWE being sold? How do they consider that all employees are in possession of material non-public information right now? It leads one to wonder if WWE is being sold. However, as we mentioned earlier, CNBC, this article from Alex Sherman came out on Tuesday saying, according to somebody familiar with the situation, the company isn't currently in sales talks. Brandon Ross of Lightshed, the analyst, they did their podcast on Friday, or I believe it came out on Thursday, actually. Brandon Ross coming away from conversations with a belief that WWE is not pursuing a sale. Nonetheless, let's speculate about who might buy WWE, because That's a thought on people's mind right now. Maybe not anytime soon, but maybe at some point in the medium-term future. These are the companies that I have heard mentioned. Comcast, NBC Universal, for whom it makes the most obvious sense, because they're paying $265 million a year for Raw. They're paying something for NXT. Maybe not a lot, but something. They're paying $200 million every year for the content that's on Peacock. So we're talking about in excess of $450 million every year. They're going to have to renew those rights pretty soon. They're going to have to renew the Raw rights next year, probably. That goes into effect in 2024. They're going to have to renew the Peacock rights if they want to keep WPLEs on Peacock, probably at an increase. We'll see. We're going to talk about Peacock in a second. So it makes a lot of sense to just buy that and to not have to worry about the rent going up and to just own the home. So it makes a lot of sense for them. Fox, maybe. I doubt it. Doesn't make a lot of sense for them, I think, because they're probably more likely to be acquired themselves. Disney. By the way, it would make sense for Comcast and NBC Universal, too, because you could take all that IP that WWE's got, maybe put it into Universal Studios. It could be a great use for WWE in Universal Studios, maybe. And that's what Nick Khan talked about in his interview on the podcast The Town with Matt Bellany ahead of WrestleMania. Disney. Is Disney going to buy WWE? They could, I suppose. I doubt it. I don't think that Disney looks at WWE content as something that is a brand match for them, would be my guess. Netflix. Netflix has expressed that they're not necessarily interested in bidding on sports rights, although apparently they did bid on Formula One, reportedly. But Netflix, before that, has expressed that they're not necessarily interested in bidding on live sports rights. And maybe it makes sense because of Formula One, because that's where Drive to Survive was distributed. But anyway, maybe they're not interested in bidding on live sports rights and getting into that competition. But maybe they're interested in acquiring a brand, a company that has sports rights. Not out of the question. I still don't think that we've ever seen something live on Netflix. Am I wrong?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay. Not that they couldn't easily make it happen, right? We're seeing live on Apple and so forth. Endeavor. Endeavor comes to mind. Brandon Ross from Lightshed has tweeted that he thinks Endeavor is the one that makes the most sense for acquiring WWE. Endeavor owns what company?
UFC.
UFC. They made the deal to acquire UFC, and maybe there's some reassurance. Well, when Vince was still in control, there's some reassurance that, hey, look, Dana still gets to do his own thing. We'll let you do your own thing too. But they have experience, I guess, managing or overseeing a combat sports live event. Live sports media rights distributor. Endeavor carries a lot of debt because of their purchase of UFC. I believe, though, that, well, maybe they could make some sort of deal that includes stock. So if you're a WWE shareholder, perhaps you end up not just with cash, but with Endeavor shares as well. Amazon, Jeff Bezos, maybe he buys it. And this is something that Laura Martin speculated on more than a year ago from Needham, I guess. And maybe you make the argument that, well, Amazon, they've got really strong distribution platform. They've got really deep pockets, much like Apple does in this game. And maybe they want to own, just like they acquired MGM recently, right? Maybe they want to acquire more companies that own their own content. Amazon doesn't own a lot of its content. It's got to license a lot of it. You know, they're not really, they're behind the game in terms of what Netflix is at in terms of producing their own content and owning their own content. So there's an advantage there for Amazon. And you could see a match for, in terms of the consumer products business. You know, obviously WWE has a sizable consumer products business that Amazon could have fine synergies with in terms of selling merchandise and things of that nature. So we'll see. Comcast and Endeavor, I think, leading candidates. Here's a question. What is Nick Khan's relationship like with Ari Emanuel? Don't know. But Endeavor did work with WWE and I think still does, right? Because they're no longer working with the former BandTech MLBAM for the network platform, which is still being distributed internationally, but I believe they're partnering still with Endeavor for the backbone of the WWE network, as it is still distributed internationally, even though in the US, obviously, that's on Peacock. So there's that. Does Brian Roberts want to buy WB, the Comcast CEO? Questionable. I suppose we take this moment to mention, what if W goes private and then Vince comes back?
Do you think that maybe Vince would, because we talked about how he would have to approve a sale still being the majority shareholder, right?
Yes.
So you think he maybe pushes a sale because, well, if I don't want anything to do with it, I don't, if I can't be there, I want nothing to do with this. So he pushes for a sale of the company?
Depends on what he does. And it's just unfathomable to be, to imagine, like, what is Vince doing right now? What is he doing right now? Did he watch, I think we have the slide here. Did he even watch SummerSlam? I was surprised that as many people, as I put this poll on Twitter, we got, it's a huge sample here, 1,482 votes and more since I took this screenshot, right? 71% of the voters here responding to the question, do you think Vince McMahon watched any part of SummerSlam? 71% of the voters said yes. I tend to think no. Because I just can't imagine. Like, here's like a real question: Would Vince know how to put the PLE on Peacock in his home? Would he know? Because Jim Ross has said, Vince doesn't watch wrestling when he's not in the gorilla position. And I wholeheartedly believe that. I totally buy that. That Vince does not like. Does he watch TV? Like, what's the last TV show that Vince watched? What's the last movie that he watched? Like, I don't really believe that he's consuming a lot of media that is not in the gorilla position and is, I doubt that he was spending a lot of time on things other than work and working out. So I don't know. It will depend on, but to your question, it will depend on what does Vince do? Does he get involved in other business projects? I don't know. Does he need cash to fund a big business project? Well, then maybe he's very open to a sale of the company so he can get cash and invest it in a big business project. However, he's about to turn 77. I don't know. And does he find that he's got nothing else to do and he wants to come back to the company, and so relinquishing control is not in his interest? We'll see. Let's make it clear. I don't expect Vince to be back in WWE. Maybe I'm just projecting here, but I think this is it. I don't buy this conspiracy theory that he's going to be lurking in the background, pulling the strings, being the puppet master. I think Triple H is going to have a lot of incentive to please many people here and to be compromising.
Do I think he's going to give his opinion on things? Sure. In most relationships with parents, your parents will always call you and suggest things. Do you think he'll go, hey, Stephanie, I think you should really put the title on theory. Just put it out there. I know I've known, you know what I mean? Like,
I can also see him once he's disengaged with this, him and being so like, and just not watching it and not being in touch with what's going on, just not having an awareness enough of what's happening to be that engaged in meaningful conversations. But to your point, he's going to be Stephanie's father, and they appear to have a good relationship. He's going to be Triple H's son-in-law or father-in-law, and they're going to be around each other, I'm sure, going forward, and they're probably going to have conversations about their business. So he may be operating as some sort of de facto advisor. Does that mean that anybody's going to listen to him? Not necessarily. All right. Moving on to, I think, Peacock. What's happening in the world of Peacock? Briefly, Peacock subscribers were flat. Comcast reported this past week their Q2 results. Peacock has 13 million subscribers as of the most recent quarter. That is, how does that compare to the prior quarter? The same, flat, no movement. Their monthly active accounts was actually down by 1 million. They don't get into more specific numbers than that. But that the Peacock has appeared to stall in terms of engagement. Now, they did have in Q1 the Olympics and the Super Bowl. Those are big events. In Q2, they did have WrestleMania, though. And if you listen to Stephanie McMahon, WrestleMania had more social engagement than the Super Bowl. Nonetheless, I think we're seeing, you know, sort of the saturation. We're getting near that saturation point. Maybe year over year, you know, Peacock will still be up next year. But we're not in the realm of explosive growth anymore here. So we're getting an idea of what's the ceiling, at least in the short and medium term, what's the ceiling for Peacock. And all those deltas that Nikon reports in every earnings about how this PLA, Money in the Bank, was X% more watched than last year. And this pay-per-view was X% more watched than last year, because they're comparing the most recent pay-per-view of a given name to either when it was on the W Network direct-to-consumer and only had in the United States 1.1 million subscribers, or they're comparing it to a more nascent Peacock that didn't have as many monthly active accounts. So we a year from now, I mean, you'll still be up year over year, but a year from now, you may not be up year over year anymore. Nonetheless, I think it's such an understood story here. If you take anything away from listening to WrestleNomics, one of my big conclusions lately has been, hey, look, yes, W popularity has declined from 2017 to 2021, meaningfully. Financial picture's great, but popularity, fan interest has declined. It has stabilized now. Why? Because of Roman Reigns? Because of the creative? Because of the content? No. Because of Peacock. More so than those other things anyway. Acknowledge Peacock.
Acknowledge the Peacock.
Acknowledge it. But seriously, we just by putting these events into more homes, I think that has contributed significantly to the stabilization of WWE's otherwise, until now, declining popularity. So anyway, that's what's happening with Peacock. Finally, this man took a tractor and nearly flipped over the ring, and, like, he could have hurt people in the audience. What are they thinking?
Very interesting thing. I liked it, though, because it was different.
Brock Lesnar took a tractor and drove it down the ramp and lifted up the ring, and the rest of the last 10 minutes of the match or whatever were wrestled with the ring on this tractor scoop. I don't know what to call it. That's how suburban and urban I am.
It was like a bulldozer thing.
Yeah.
But on a tractor, yeah.
Yeah. Front hoe? I don't know. I don't know what to call it. Anyway, I was afraid that this ring was going to come apart and, like, fall on someone. There was nothing stopping Brock from, like, hitting the wrong lever. And I'm sure, boy, he's such a farmer. I'm sure he knew what he was doing there. But mistakes happen. And nobody's wearing hard hats. Nobody's wearing hard hats for any of this. There was nothing stopping him from, like, hitting people in the crowd or something like that. I was the big shovel thing was, like, hanging over the ring at one point. I was afraid, like, and it had, like, this sharp edge. I was afraid somebody was, like, gonna run. There was, like, gonna be a German suplex and somebody was gonna take it in the head. Anyway, SummerSlam happened last night. People think that Vince actually watched it. Attendance, tickets distributed anyway. WrestleTix came out with its final count this morning. Final count for SummerSlam. Tickets distributed, according to the ticket map, estimated at 40,000. 40,117. 40,000. Glenn, though, Glenn came out. He didn't espouse any of his political beliefs, but Kane came out, and he said 48,449. So you have to lie it up at least a little bit. A difference of about 8,000 there. How does this compare?
Oh, yes. I was going to say, we have a super chat regarding this, too, from earlier. CWJ128, if you had to speculate, do you think the gate plus merch for SummerSlam was over under plus 4 merch. Million? Thank you for the content, and be well. Thank you, CW.
Thank you. Off the top of my head, I would guess over, but let's see here. Let's go 40,000. Let's say 95% of that was paid. That leaves us about 38,000 paid times. What do we think for average ticket price here? I would say like, I don't know, $100. We're at $3.8 million. Okay. Remember that goal, $3.8 million. And let's say, merch per capita. Let's go 16. That's probably too conservative. Let's go 17 times 38,000 paid attendees. That's an additional $646,000 plus $3.8 million is $4.4 million. That's a good over under $4 million. Yeah. Yeah, where is this photo here? Yes, one side of the stadium was empty. I mean, nonetheless, they had 40,000 people here. How does this compare to the SummerSlam of last year in Las Vegas? According to WrestleTix, it's just under that. 45,690 was the SummerSlam last year in Las Vegas. Keep in mind, that was just after the return to touring, when there did appear to be a pent-up demand effect. So I think that's pretty good considering it was only slightly down from the first big stadium event after the return to touring. Critical reception to this pay-per-view. Yeah, I called it a pay-per-view. What are you going to do? Critical reception to this pay-per-view, pretty good. On Cage Match, the inmates rating it of 7.6, which is comparable to the Hell in a Cell, which is the Cody Torn Peck pay-per-view. But, you know, on the scale of WWE pay-per-views, that's a pretty high rating. The highest over the... So we're looking at this from the entire year of 2021 and year-to-date 2022. So everything from Royal Rumble 2021 and forward. And that would be... That's among the highest, right? Not... There's only one pay-per-view event that's rated in an 8 or higher, and that is the WrestleMania Saturday, which is currently standing at an 8.04. There are several that are higher or within the range of this pay-per-view, but this is on the high end for sure, because there are some abysmal pay-per-views like Elimination Chamber of this year and Royal Rumble of this year. So there's that. Moving on to another story broken by WrestleNomics this week.
Yes.
NXT Premium Live Event, September 4th. NXT will not just, yes, they are having these special takeovers that have their own special brand name, like Great American Bash, like, what was it, Spring Breakin'. They're going to have another one called Heat Wave on, I believe, August 16th. But they're also going to have, it's not a Tuesday night. This is a exclusive Peacock and W Network event, September 4th. So what else is on September 4th?
All out.
All Out.
Yep.
Not clear if this is actually going to be in prime time. No, it's not going to be in the UK. Read the article. Subscribe to WrestleNomics. You would know that. It's scheduled to be in Orlando, so probably in the Performance Center, almost certainly. Could be in the afternoon, but I'd be more surprised if it was in the afternoon and not running head-to-head with AEW. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Question I have on this, would there be some, I would imagine WWE is going to package this as like one of the biggest weekends in WWE history, Clash in the Castle and NXT, because they have Clash in the Castle the day before, like, right, on that Saturday.
Be able to,
I imagine,
this NXT event on, yeah, Clash in the Castle, which will have a sizable audience.
Yeah, and I imagine there's going to be some type of merging of a promotion there, and I'm interested to see too, this NXT 2.0 with Triple H, I imagine, having more involvement with that, this is going to be a more AEW-like product again.
We'll see. I think we'll see a gradual movement. You know, I don't think Triple H is going to be in a hurry to alienate people who have been doing their jobs since he's not been overseeing NXT. I don't think he wants to rock the boat for political reasons, for financial reasons. But we may see things change over time. I'm reminded of something that a friend of the show, PWO Loss from Pro Wrestling Only, has said, I believe it's him, that this was years ago. This is now when NXT was becoming a pretty strong product under Triple H's oversight. And I think he would say something to the effect of that, you know, one day we're just going to wake up and it's going to be Triple H's WWE. I think now is the time to apply that, you know, little by little. One day we're going to wake up and it's not going to be Vince McMahon's WWE anymore, either on the main roster or NXT. But that's going to be a slow process. Slow process. Moving on. I think we're done. I think that's it.
Yeah. They were doing the tryouts this week. I haven't seen any names of any independent wrestlers released, but that is another thing to look out for, you know. I think somebody reported this week, and I'm sorry if I can't remember, that they're not going to abandon the athlete thing. That's still going to be a thing, and clearly with people that were at the tryout. But you'll probably see wrestlers with experience also being in these NXT classes.
Gradually, I think we'll see traditional trials that we've seen in the past that invited wrestlers with wrestling experience. Why not do both too?
Yeah.
You know, why have to have one vision about why have to be like all about, no, we're only going to recruit experienced wrestlers. And to the same token, why have this vision of, no, we're only going to recruit collegiate athletes. Why not recruit both? And hey, this NIL program is maybe a good public relations policy as well. This gets you articles in ESPN and The Athletic, and maybe that helps your perception as a legitimate, valuable, attractive sports brand to business partners, advertisers, distributors.
All right, so.
So?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there we go. That's what I was looking for, yes.
Hit the thumbs up button. Share this podcast. Subscribe to it on YouTube or on your podcast app. If you give us a nice review, that really helps us a lot. The more thumbs up you get, I think that helps us. It helps other people discover WrestleNomics. Like we mentioned, there were at least three stories here. Well, there's really two exclusive stories on the NXT, on the prohibition of WWE stock sales for employees. Those are broken just this week, as well as I had some ongoing coverage of WWE business on Monday. That was just in the past week. If you're listening to this on Monday, Monday is the best day to sign up because you get the fullest value for your subscription. If you sign up at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, you also get access to all the TV ratings reporting I've been doing. We also reported quarter hours for most of the month of July in the recent days. So that's all out there, as well as you get access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. You get slides for all the podcasts, including one that you're listening to or watching right now. Who's a Draw? We're going to record Who's a Draw on Wednesday.
Yep, Wednesday
we're going to do that. I know people have asked me recently about, well, do you have ratings by wrestler? Well, that the Who's a Draw analysis is the closest that we get to that, where we go through all of the quarter hours for the recently ended month. We go through all the quarter hours and all of the related YouTube videos, and we try to assess who's making a positive difference for these wrestling programs. And you get access to more, including the industry reports, including additional reporting that happens sometimes. You can join the hundreds of subscribers, including executives and wrestlers in the business who subscribe to WrestleNomics. One of those wrestlers may be having me on his podcast sometime soon. We'll see. And then from there.
Yeah, you can find me, Chris Gullo, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I have my other podcast, Rediscovering the Indies. We actually just released our part one episode of Dragon Gate USA. And on that episode, it's a lot about what Dragon Gate doing some business in the United States before the launch of the promotion, as far as, well, as running shows in Hawaii and Los Angeles, their relationship with Ring of Honor and how that kind of ended, Gabe Sapolsky's departure from Ring of Honor, and of course the formation of Dragon Gate USA and their first show that they put on, and using a pay-per-view streaming model that Ring of Honor ended around the same time. So lots. If you're a Ring of Honor fan, it's a very good show as well. But lots of good stuff there with Dragon Gate USA. Of course, it's RTA Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Rediscovering Indies on Facebook.
Okay, and thanks as always to Post Wrestling for being our podcast distribution partner. Good luck to Wei Ting, who's now on paternity leave. Do you want to read us out?
Yes, we want to thank our WrestleNomics contributors, Jason Ubrinster.
We try to have her. Just relax.
Jason Ubrinster.
Ubrinster, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Chris Healy, Jesse Collings, technical consultant Phil Chertok. Special thanks to John Pollock, Wei Ting, Corey Gibson, Show Buzz Daily, and Russell Ticks. WrestleNomics was created by Chris Arrington. It's distributed in cooperation with Post Wrestling and supported by listeners and viewers like you. Thank you, everybody, and thank you for your super chats.
Okay. Thanks. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.